Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Okay, welcome to a special Red Agenda with The Athletic. We're putting the focus on one of Jurgen's closest and most trusted assistants. He's Liverpool's goalkeeping coach, John Achterberg. Welcome to the pod, John.
All right, how are you, so, Si? All good?
Yeah, great, thank you. Lovely to have you on. Great to have you back on. And of course, it is the international break. Is it offering you anything of a bit of downtime in the Liverpool camp?
Yeah, we get a week off and everyone get a special program for the players who are not on international duty. But obviously, you do look at the next opponents and try to get the session ready for when you're back and stuff like that. So although you have a little bit spare time, you still have to keep running and do the fitness and get the sessions prepared if you like. So, but all good.
We're going to do a little bit of a historic journey because you've been at the football club for, what, 12 years now. It's some journey you've been on with Liverpool. Just before we get there, I'm interested. We're on Zoom at the moment, and right behind you, you've got this incredible picture of you and the coaching staff. I don't know whether you can just turn around, maybe just give us an idea of what this picture means to you, where it's from. I mean, obviously, I can see where it's from, but just tell people listening what it means to you, who's alongside you, and what it sums up.
Yeah, it's basically all the closest staff to the team, no? The boss and Pep, Corny and Ray, who is the team manager, Jack, my assistant, and Vito, who is in charge of the younger players, and Pete, the boss, his analyst, assistant, manager as well. So, obviously, winning the Premier League, no, after 30 years, it wasn't magic time and day, and hopefully we can prepare and do it again, no, because that's the aim from everyone in the club and the players. You know, it's always your dream to win something like this, but yeah, you also want to do it again and keep producing it, really. But it's not easy because everyone else wants it as well, but you have to work hard for it, and hopefully we can try it again.
You got your arm clasped around Jurgen there, and you just look a very tight-knit group. Do you often look at that picture, and does it serve as a motivator and an inspiration to you?
Well, I mean, it's all about teamwork anyway, you know, with the players and the staff. You know, we need everyone. Obviously, there's a lot more staff than this. You have the physios, you know, the scouting department, Michael Edwards' department, of course. So the kitchen department, nutrition, everything. So it's a big team, and you need everyone to produce and do the best they can to prepare the team the best they can to have success. And the owners, of course, put that in place by investing in that to make things like this happen. So, and yeah, of course, you have to then work together as good as we can.
John, I quite like a night out. So what was the better celebration, the Champions League or winning the league?
Yeah, that's easy, no? And it's a shame. It's a shame that we didn't be able to do the league how it should have been, because I think it would overtake the Champions League, right? Because people were going to fly in all over the world, really, to celebrate. And I think everything was booked out in whole Liverpool. And in my opinion, there were already 1 million on the street when we win the Champions League. But I think when you win the Premier League, it could have been double that, I would say, you know. And that's for that, we would love to do it again, to see it one more time, really. That would be amazing.
Did the players and the staff talk about that? You know, that's a real motivation that, okay, you've won the league, but without having the hit of the celebration.
Yeah, of course, because all the supporters, it's a big family, you know. We all want to do the same and wanted also to gather to celebrate it. And that is, yeah, it was a really, I don't know if it's frustrating, but for sure, we wanted that more than ever to do that with the players, especially also after 30 years. But, you know, we cannot change it. So hopefully the only way we can change this is to try to do it again. And hopefully we can.
John, be honest with this one. When you think back to last season, was it a little bit soulless? Was it not really the Premier League? Obviously, you lost your crown as Premier League champions, but actually the fact there was no fans in there and the way the season was played out, does it almost feel like there's a little bit of a line through it?
Yeah, of course, you know, in the home games, you can see it every time, no? How much that means to the players as well, and how much the players get fired up by the supporters, no? Because it does make you work or run twice as hard, I think, anyway. You know, now it was empty, so it's no really atmosphere, if you like, and you need that really to make the extra step, I think, to get more determined. And it should not be like that, but it's human that things like that then doesn't work as much as it should.
Have you got as much determination as the team had to end the 30-year drought as to actually win it in front of the fans now?
Yeah, I still have the same hunger and determination. You're always looking to do better and improve. And I don't know if it's a kind of greediness, but you need to have the kind of greediness to always want to be better and find better and do better. And you know, the moment you don't have that, that is the moment where the quality goes down, and that is in each individual that is the same. You know, if you are a player, you need to create your own hunger, you need to create your own readiness and do the right things day in, day out to be ready. And that is in every position in a top club. You need to be the best and expect to be the best, and that's what you want to be and want to do. So
John, just on the theme of celebrations, I know you enjoy a celebration when a dramatic goal goes in late on, and we've seen you on the pitch a few times. I mean, is it possible to express how that feels? You know, when you know that something special has happened, it's a match-winning goal. You know, do you feel like a player then? You know, like the way you did when you were a goalkeeper playing, you know, a Tranmere, or does it feel different to that again? Does almost fan mode take over? Because I've seen people doing exactly what you do, which is, it's great to watch. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, but it's also a pressure release, no? Because people think it's an easy job, but you have every day you have pressure, because like I said, every day everything has to be perfect. You know, the training has to be perfect. You want all the goalies to be perfect, you know, everyone has to stay fit, you know. So there goes a lot in, you know, to think about what we need to do training-wise, what the opponent does, what do you have to prepare for them, the best to prepare them for the games and stuff. So, you know, you're on the big games also, and even the small games, you always have the pressure, you know, we need to win, and we need to keep a clean sheet, and we need to do well. And, you know, and if you then score, you know, a winning goal, or, to drag this game again over the line, that is where the celebration comes from, really. I did celebrate when I was a player as well. But, you know, when you're in the game, it's a lot easier to do than when you're on the side, because you have not everything in your hands. You can only try on around the game to try to make everything perfect. But obviously, when you're on the not on the pitch, you cannot affect it really. So So yeah, I think that is a little bit the situation. It's like a precious release in my feeling.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
John, you've had 12 years at the football club, so let's sort of trace that journey and how you first arrived at Liverpool. I mean, can you believe it's 12 years, first of all? Because not many coaches, not many backroom staff that high up in top clubs withstand that sort of time period.
Well, it's still 12 years too short in my feeling, but, you know, it's my passion and I cannot call it a job. It's, you know, it's just, it's my, dream thing to do, really. And I would do it in every club. I would do everything I do here. I would do it if I was in a different club, you know, because that's the passion I have, really. But yeah, it suited me being here because as a player, I always wanted to be perfect. And yeah, I always have the drive, really. So, and that didn't change. To be in this club is amazing. And you see, actually, when you go on tour, how big the club is. And you know, people can only see that if you are on the inside, really, if you go on tour and you see how much it does to the people. You know, and obviously everyone are big supporters with gives you also pressure because people always also want us to be perfect and win, really. So, but yeah, I have never, people say sometimes, oh, you must have a day where you don't want to go and work. And I can tell you, no, I never had that one day, you know, not as a player and not as a coach, you know, and that won't happen, you know. That's why I say, they call it work, but it's for me not a job, really.
I think you're pretty much known as a student of the game, aren't you? Was that the case when you were at Eindhoven? And how did John Aldridge make the move for you and get you over to England?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously played, I think, in Holland. In my hometown, I was the number two goalie, so I was there 6 years. 3 years in the youth and 3 years with the first team as the number two. Then I moved to NEC in Breda. I was there 3 years too. I played 14 games in the Premier League. But then, yeah, the other goalie had 10-year contract. So I wanted to be number one, you know, and I the Bosman rule came in. So you could jump without, because they not give me a 3-year contract, but I wanted to play. So go to Eindhoven to play. Well, it was the division below, and I thought, you know, I can jump back from playing, get more experience. But when I started there, I pretty quick realized that the level was, no disrespect, but a lot lower than when you were in the Premier League in Holland. So, and I got really frustrated because I wanted always to win and be perfect in training and off training, and that didn't happen always there. So, yeah, I wanted to leave. I got a few injuries. Utrecht wanted to re-sign me. And they asked too much money then because I was still in contract. And then, obviously, in 2 years, my contract ran out. And then I was still injured. So I go to train at Willem II, where Sami Hyypiä was at that time, to get fit. So I did the preseason. And then, obviously, in Holland, all the clubs were sorted because in Holland, the team signing the new players already in April, where in England, that start normally when the preseason starts again. So the agent sorted me a trial at Tranmere because obviously they said the goalie getting sold to Everton. So And then I went there for 2 weeks on trial, and obviously Aldo was the manager, and Chidi was assistant, and Neville Souter was the goalie coach. So, you know, 2 weeks I was there, and after the 2 weeks, they liked what I did, and they said they want to sign me there. So, but they still had to sell the goalie first. When they sold in, they got me back, I think, 2 weeks after I left already.
John, what was it like training with Neville Southall? I mean, I know this is obviously a Liverpool podcast, but he is regarded as arguably one of the greatest British goalkeepers ever. And, you know, massive personality.
Yeah.
Must have been quite an introduction to British football, I suppose.
Yeah, of course. Actually, he was one of my favorite goalies as well when I was obviously in Holland. So then to train with a legend like that as a coach was good. You know, he was really relaxed in training, to be honest, and he brings some banter. But he was actually driving down from Dover where he was still playing. So he came and we had only goalie training, I think, 2 times a week or something. And after that, after 1 year, he left, and then Erik Nixon came full time. But he drove from Dover on a Tuesday night straight to Tranmere, slept in the car, and then trained us at 10 in the morning. And then after an hour goalie training, we had 2 hour team training. So it was like 3 hours nonstop getting beasted. But, you know, it also... I always see the positive side on it. So it was hard work, but also improve you mentally and learning a lot of, yeah, getting fitter and improve your levels, if you like. So,
John, did you think as your career progressed at Tranmere, you would stay in football? Was that always the intention? And also how did the move to Liverpool come about? Because I remember at the time that it's fair to say the club was in a bit of, you know, bit of turmoil. There was a lot going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Obviously, you only find out later that there is a lot happening behind the scenes. But basically, I always was thinking I'd become a goalie coach. I already started in Holland when I was at Eindhoven. I did the whole academy there. I did a local team in around my hometown. I did the whole academy there and the first team goalies training. So I was already 24 doing coaching. After playing, training, I go to coach most of the days, and did all the licenses, some in Holland and then some when I came to England. When I came to Tranmere, I already started pretty soon to do some goalkeeping days and stuff, but the chairman in the club was not so keen that I carried it on. So then I had to park it for a few years because obviously probably they wanted me to focus more on the football than do all the coaching. But when I was about 32 or something like that, I started back up and then did the whole academy in Tranmere, and I make my own goalkeeping schools, one in Liverpool, one in North Wales with Flint Town, and then one in Birkenhead. So from there, I try to find goalies to sign for Tranmere, and I signed a few out of that. Tranmere never had any goalies who made the first team out of their own youth system, really. Part from Joey, I think, who they got from Ireland. So, and after that, they always had to get people being released. So I changed that. And then they had some goalies who make the first team. Luke Pilling obviously was not the tallest, but made the first team. Joe Collister made some games in the first team. And Andrew... I forgot his second name. He made the first team and then played later for Wrexham. So, and then obviously Shamal, I took, who is now playing for Colchester. I found him and then took him from Tranmere to Liverpool. So I know how to work it, if you like. And yeah, and then, you know, I was 37 or 6 and I needed to do my goalkeeping A license and the outfield A license. So I did the outfield A license. Then the goalkeeping A license, I had to do a study at a Premier League team. So that's what they said. So I sent some CVs or faxes to Everton and Liverpool if I could come and watch the training, because that was needed. So I didn't get reply at the time. So one of the coaches who worked with me in my goalkeeping school said, I know the reserve team goalie coach, Billy Stewart, at the Liverpool. So then he asked if I could watch the training there. So I went there. And then Safi Valero was there watching the training. So got to talk. And then he asked me if I wanted to watch the training the next day with the first team. And yeah, so I went there. Of course, you want to watch. And then I had the questions, how he did things and stuff like, just to know what they do. So I wrote it down and spoke to him after. And that was it. So I texted them all, thanks for this. And then obviously went, finished the A license. And that this was probably in November or something like that, or October. And then out of nothing in February or something, Safi texted me like, you want to meet for a coffee to talk about goalies and stuff like that. So that's how it went. So I met him a few times. I had written the whole cycle from what I think goalkeepers should be able to know and learn when they are from 6 up to the first team, basically. And after the second time we met, I said, this is how I see it and how I think. And I gave it to him and said, let me know what you think about it. So that's how it went. And I think in April or so, he said something like, after the third times meeting, if I was interested to do the 23s and the academy. And yeah, I was 38. So, it's, you can maybe carry on, because I try to keep fit always to play for 2 more years or go and make your next step with a really good chance to join Liverpool. So there was not a lot thinking about it. And so I jumped on that, and that's what happened, really. And then obviously started with the 23s and the academy. Then obviously Benitez left in that summer after 1 year, and it was Benitez who offered me the contract. So Sami was with the first team, and he still stayed on from being the assistant with Benitez, and said, John, you need to start the preseason here. Roy Hodgson's coming in, but he has not got the goalkeeping coach yet in. So started there. After 1 week, on the first day, he said, yeah, I bring my own goalie coach. So then you go back to the academy. I said, yeah, no problem. So started there. And after 1 week, obviously he wasn't there, Mike Kelly. And then I went to tour. And after the tour, he said on the flight back, John, I like really what you do, and I want to keep you with the first team, and you can help Mike with the first team goalie training. And that's how it went, really. That was a little bit the journey, if you like.
You've had a unique insight into the evolution of the club over the last 10 years. And obviously, as you mentioned there, with various different managers. So what sort of state do you think the playing squad was in and the club was in 10 years ago when you first entered that sort of first team world, and Roy Hodgson, and obviously then Kenny Dalglish?
Yeah, I think you feel that there is an issue, because there was not a lot possible. It was difficult to get things you know, if you wanted to have, say, paper printed with goalie sessions on and stuff to write down, that was difficult. Everything was difficult to get, if you like. So that was one. And if you look at the playing squad, there was not all the top players. Yeah? Stevie obviously was the main top player. And, you know, Caro, of course, was a really good defender as well. And then the rest was not top. Here and there, you have one good player, but not really top players, if you like. And some were actually average in other teams, and then they came to us, really. So if you look back for a top team, then you see that there is issues. No, we only signed very cheap players or free players. And you know, I think that if you look back, that was then at the time the issue. And then obviously the club gets sold and the new owners come in. And from that moment, everything goes to the right direction, if you like, because everything was possible and they created the environment that everything had to be improved and be better. And yeah, people from the outside, they don't see that too much, but you know, you can only see that they built a new training ground and they built the new stadium, but actually anything we need for the team, we can get. We can get equipment for the training. We can get a new laptop if we need it. Everything, you know, you see the nutrition, how it is changed. Everything around the team is changed and improved. Everything gone to an unbelievable level now. And it's been made a top sport environment by the owners. And I think people don't always see that. And I think we should be happy that this happened. And yes, yeah, everyone wants to sign Messi and Mbappe, but you know, it has to fit in the structure. You also have the rules with fair play. And I know some teams can do different things, but they are really follow the rules, and that's how they did. And you know, you see it with other teams. They have the Red Sox. They didn't win before they started there, and they win the World Series with the baseball. So they do have a good thing. And then obviously they changed the scouting structure. Michael Edwards got in with the scouting team in charge. And then in the end, obviously signed the boss. What makes the next step? When the boss came in, you can see everything change, you know. Then there was a top manager who basically changed the whole atmosphere in the stadium by the way he coached and kept the people in the stadium, because before they always left early, and then created the team, because in the end, you know, you can have good players, but the manager still need to make it a team, because, you know, if you haven't got a good manager, then that is from my experience over all the years, then yeah, that won't happen, you know. So he really created that, I would say.
John, just before we speak about Jürgen, obviously from a personal perspective, you went, you sort of worked under four different managers before he arrived.
Yeah.
Like, is that unsettling, that process, when there's people coming and going and they might want their own staff?
Sorry?
I know you're distracted there. I don't know who's in the room with you, but
yeah.
There's a lot of managerial changes, from your own personal perspective, is that unsettling? You know, do you think, the new manager might want to make a change? And how do you deal with that process? Because before Jürgen came, I think there were four different managers at Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, when the new manager comes in, you always have to wait and see what happens, no? Because you never know what happens.
Stability of the assistant manager.
Huh? You can explain. Pep is just coming in to explain the teamwork we have here.
Pep Linder's adding some quality to the podcast.
Pep and I were obviously allowed to stay the last time when Klopp came in, and
Allowed?
Yeah, we were allowed to stay. Pep said they needed us. So, yeah, you know, spoke to us really when the boss came, and that we are staying to help also the boss with how things happen and keep the level in the club.
So it's funny how he's become much more aware of what he's saying now. Pep's in the background.
But that's true. No, if there's a new manager comes in, you always have to wait and see what happens. No.
Yeah.
Because it's not in your hand. And if a manager has his own staff and he wants to bring his own staff, then everything can change. That's how it is. No. And we can only do every day the work we do and try to be the best we can in the hope that we can carry on with it. And that's what we wanted. So that's how I see it anyway.
I thought it was really interesting when you were talking about the infrastructure and perhaps what the fans don't see, but you see as a management team or the internal team, and how FSG came in and meant business straight away. You know, did you feel from the very word go with FSG that it was all about success?
Yeah, they explained it when they came in that they wanted to be successful and win things. They are not here just to stabilize the club, but they wanted here to win trophies and bring Liverpool back to the top. And obviously, they make every time the steps with it. And the major step was to bring the boss in, really. That's how it is.
So what's that, 6 years? I think we've just seen the 6 year anniversary, haven't we, of Jürgen's arrival? Do you feel like he's brought an identity back to the football club, John?
Yeah, for sure. I think a club like Liverpool has a special way of playing and entertaining. So you need to find the right manager. And I think that's what the club in the end did. No, they looking on managers who play attractive football and done well before. And obviously, Jürgen showed that where he was with Dortmund with less money than Bayern and still challenge them and win the league and win trophies there. And his attraction playing-wise and style obviously works perfect. Also, how he was there with Dortmund and his supporters, it's a little bit similar. Although Liverpool is probably 2-3 times bigger than Dortmund in terms of fan base. So, and that's what he did, no? I will mention Pep because he's in the office. I already did, but obviously, yeah, Pep, he is good in explanation, and he had to do all the training really because the assistant Zelko at the time, he didn't speak too good English, so Pep did all the training and discussed what he had to do with him, and then the boss stepped in if he was happy or not happy and bring the tactics over together.
John, does he pay a key interest into goalkeeping then, Jürgen Klopp? And what does he expect from you and from whoever is Liverpool's goalkeeper?
Yeah, he obviously he got me an assistant in the end because he was sick of me talking about goalkeepers. That's what he said. But because I could turn every conversation about the players to goalkeepers. Pep is coming in now to say what he wants to say.
Even when we speak about politics, he can change that into like a discussion about Simon in Belgium or whatever.
But everything leads back to goalkeeper, no matter
everything
what.
Everything. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
So you've been given a goalkeeping coach to talk to, basically, or to talk
about. Yeah, we needed like to... So it's much less now.
Yeah. We can now talk to Jack about it. But obviously you discuss with the boss everything what needs to happen about the goalkeepers. And you give always your opinion on it, and the boss decide in the end what he feels is right, and you give always your analysis on it, you see it, and he can then make a decision on that, and sometimes he goes with your decision and sometimes he'll make his own decision, because that's why he's the manager and that's what you accept, and that's how it is really. So yeah, we're not talking now every 5 minutes about goalkeepers, but on the major things we will do.
If everything with you comes back to talking about goalkeepers, what is it with Pep? What's Pep always come back to talking about?
Pep is only talking tactics and the next opponent and every player in Europe, what we could use for us to make us better. But he can tell them.
Pep. What are you obsessed with, Pep?
I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with Liverpool, the club. And obsessed with our team and our way of play, I think. Those three.
Philosophy.
Yeah, but especially our way, like how to evolve and how to make the next step and all these things. Yeah. On the training pitch, off the training pitch. But about Johnny, because the interview is about Johnny, there's not one goalkeeper, and I've been in a lot of places, but there's not one goalkeeper coach with more passion than John. So, example, I drive in today. It's, what is it, Monday. We have a day off today. And for sure, he was already in like at 8:30, but it's a day off. So, anyway, his car is the only car who's always on the car park.
Yeah. It's dedication for you, isn't it?
I think, it's passion. Huh? So, you only become, you're not born with it, I think. So, you develop quality, I think, with giving everything and like really think about things. So, and I think we cannot have a better guy who leads this complete goalkeeper department. So
he's, I don't know, I cannot say that.
But it's true. So,
you seem like a very tight-knit group.
Yeah, but I think that better people make a better team. So you only, maybe there are better coaches or maybe better goalkeeper coaches or better whatever. But I think as a group, we are pretty good. So I think this is the most important, that you help each other and that you stand for each other. So, and that's what we try to do always. So I like the stability in our club. And I like, despite what people say outside our club, I like how we do things. We think about things. We know we need to overperform to reach certain targets, but that's how it should be, in my opinion, in football. So, yeah. Not buying. Yeah, cool.
Is it fair to say that, you know, across the coaching staff, you know, that in terms of the personalities you're involved, it's obsessive people, basically. You've got to be obsessed to operate at the level that you're working on.
Yeah, that's what I said, no, about the picture before. You need to work always, every day, the best you can and want to be the best and always looking to improve and find new things to make everything better. And yeah, everyone in this department have to knit together to make this happen. And that is for most coaches and the players the same.
This only can grow over years.
Yeah.
Like this process with this proper quality process, I think can only grow with stability, with a vision, with a club who really wants to take things forward on the training pitch. So then you need to. Huh? Yeah. And we have our group together now we brought Vitor in. What a coach he is from Porto. So we brought Jack in, so John can talk about goalkeepers to somebody else. and that's it, huh?
Yeah.
And the rest is all together. I left for a short while, but
You guys obviously devoted to the football club. I think Jürgen said in a recent TV interview that you can't lead a normal life being Liverpool manager. Do you feel that way? Is it not normal, Liverpool? I mean, obviously you've worked at other football clubs. Is there a different level of pressure and expectation for all of you?
I think that's a good question for John.
I say that it's every training is pressure, and every game is pressure. If that is in Pep's job or my job, we have to be perfect every day. We always have to think about, is this the right thing to do? Do we have to change anything? Because we have to prepare the team as good as we can. And I think that's for every department. The visual department have to get the people in the right frame, being ready for the next game. The scouting department, they have to try to find us also new players. And then obviously we have the kitchen department who give all the right food with Mona and the supplements for the players to be in the perfect shape. So, you know, everyone has to be the best they can be. And that's what we try to do, really.
Yeah, because of the our playing group and the club deserves it. That we have this mentality that we see the next game as the next final.
Yeah,
like have this mentality to change like a simple rondo in something what makes what looks like a final. If you see how competitive our players make these kind simple exercises, we have a very special group, and they really train. Mm-hmm. I really feel this. So they really train. If it's their last training in their life many times. So, and I think that if you talk about, we say always like 80% of the 3 points are made like on Monday, yeah. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday by preparing. We really believe in this. So then you have to create this environment in the club, on the pitch. And if you talk then about pressure, that's the pressure. But I think Shankly said it well, playing for Liverpool should be like a privilege. But yeah, to prepare that and to do the right things, it costs a lot of energy, and that's our job, and we are used to that, so that's not really not a problem. The problem is if you're seventh in the table and you have only 12 games to go, that's pressure. That's what we had last year.
There's a different pressure.
Yeah, Jürgen said, just touching on that, Jürgen said that It was one of his, you know, biggest achievements in football to get back.
I think. Yeah.
I mean, does everybody feel that way at the club? What do you think? Yeah. Why do you think the team is able to turn it round and finish so strongly? Because the number of points Liverpool had managed to achieve from the position Liverpool were in was incredible, really.
Consistency, momentum. Having the right players on the right positions again, playing with two centre halves who were with us since 6-7 years old. Yeah, Nate was later, but Reece, example, wasn't. They gave everything, and they gave us back like stability in other positions. Yeah. So they made big steps. Of course, different players make a different approach. So we had to learn as well in the season to find the right approach again, like with a different tactical setup. But
and then the players also find the fight again, you know, to make sure that we drag the games over the line, I would say. And we have the quality on the field, but then it all knit together again. No?
Yeah, it was, for me, it was one of my, for us, was one of the greatest periods.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You mentioned the word evolution before, Pep. How is it? How realistic is it to be constantly evolving with a team like Liverpool?
Because one, it's a team sport, so it means that the better you work together, the better relationship between players come. The better you will perform. So that's always possible to improve, like the connections between the players. So a team sport, that's one. And second, the individual player, whatever the age, and I think Millie shows this really well, there's always room for improvement. There's always room to become better. You never stop learning. And these two combinations of improving like the individuals and improving like the common plan that makes you make new steps. That's one. And second, you other teams become better, other teams invest. So you need like to find new ways and new solutions for different problems. And we try to avoid these problems by being one step in front of the Concurrence? Do you say concurrence? The concurrent.
Or the opponents.
The opponents. Like, yeah, the main opponents. We try to be one step in front of them. So that's why you need to evolve. And evolve has to do with different kind of relationship, different kind of dynamics. And we had this year already. And now it's about you guys to find out what are the differences. We have a lot of things
Well, maybe can you give us an example of like something you might be doing a bit differently this season, you know, in terms of, you know, people talk about marginal gains in football.
Yeah.
You know, what's the latest marginal gain that you've...
I think that's something for United and for City and for Chelsea to find out.
Yeah, that's it. No, you cannot say anything what we do to help opponents, really. So
yeah.
But it's a constant. It's nice. It's really cool, no?
Yeah, but that's also, you know, what I said before. You always have to be on your front foot and always looking at new solutions and finding out and looking at new stuff and think ahead, really. And that's what keeps you hungry as well.
I think with Ali example, we found like a big puzzle piece, no?
Yeah.
For this team. And with Virgil, we found a big, big puzzle piece.
Yeah.
In terms of making the step with a good with the signing really improve the team immediately, and that's one. But for them to stay on a certain level or to keep improving as well, that's your job, man. And that's what happened. So Ali is always improving.
But you always have to talk to him as well and say how you see it. And you know, he has the mentality as well, you know, and he obviously is a top goalie, and you just try to help him to feel as good as he can and be ready as good as he can, really. And you always talk to any goalkeeper, really, and you always have to keep finding the motivation and set yourself new targets. If something doesn't go well, can you find a new solution to keep your mental ready and ready to go again and show people, you know.
Can you imagine why we brought Jack in? Because he just goes on and on like this. I don't want to speak about goalie, John. I don't want to speak about goalie.
Yeah, I think.
No, I don't want. But you guys can speak now.
The problem is for them. That's why I got Jack. Is that
no? It's a joke. We didn't bring Jack in for you to speak.
No, they can focus more on the team. So that, but it's all good.
Just one word on a present day player who's blowing our minds, which is Mo Salah.
Yeah.
So if you're a goalkeeping coach of an opposition team, how on earth do you prepare to play Mo Salah in his current form?
Well, Mo is a little bit a player who does everything what comes up in his mind. So it's difficult to do, but you can try to recreate some kind of sessions. Mo comes inside, shoots. So then you do a session where if a player does that all the time, you make the same kind of movements, although the level is not as high, but we can still shoot the balls pretty good to try to tell the goalie, if he does this, you have to be in this positioning to have the chance to make the best save. And this is what the opponent basically does. If they play with pullbacks, we make reaction saves of the pullback. So, you know, if he can't cut the pullback out, that he gets in the same movement in line with the ball and then be steady and ready to make the save. If they block you as a goalie, you get blocked for corners, you block the goalie and tell him what can you do to free yourself. Speak to the referee because they can look more at it, stuff like that, you know.
He's a goalie's worst nightmare, though, isn't he? I mean, you look at the goal against Manchester City. I mean, that is one of the great goals, isn't it, John?
Them things happen, of course, no. But you have to find the right solution, and hopefully he finds the right solution at the right time in the game. But you know, for instance, when you got the goal conceded Burnley in the past when there was no VAR, where for sure get blocked, then you expect the referee also to be on that. But in England, you get away with it. So you have to find solutions and you have to find a kind of aggression to deal with it. And that's why you talk about in the week leading up to the game and make this kind of exercises to deal with it. And, you know, that's basically preparing what the players do on the field, and then you do it separate with the goalies, and then it all knits in together and they work on it in the training the same.
Don, can I just ask you about your relationship with the goalkeepers? So when a goalkeeper makes a mistake, do you feel a sense of greater pressure than maybe another part of the pitch? And equally, when a goalkeeper makes a big save, do you feel a sense of, I suppose, pride and achievement, or he's done something to affect the game that you've maybe worked on in the training ground?
You know, you win together and you lose together. So if he would do something wrong, you feel yourself the same, because you probably feel it more than an outfield coach, because, you know, they look more on a tactical mistake that they could have made in the game or something. But yeah, you're responsible for the goalie. So if the goalie doesn't do well, then you feel that yourself as well. That's how it is, no? I would not put the smile on my face, that's for sure. And that's what I say. If he does something good, then obviously you're also over happy. And, you know, you always work for a clean sheet, because that makes a chance to win games.
John Achterberg, you've been absolutely brilliant. Thank you very much indeed. And Pep Linders, of course, as well. Your right-hand man. He was superb on the pod. So thank you to Pep.
Yeah, he's here. So,
well. Yeah, thanks, guys. Top
man, Pep. Thank you very much for your time.
Make sure you make a quick end of it. You need to get on the golf field in half an hour.
I've got Chris Kirkland waiting for me.
Chris and Neil as well.
Thank you very much indeed. I hope everyone listening has enjoyed that. Brilliant insight from John Achterberg and Pep Linders as well. And Simon Hughes, of course, as always. That was another Red Agenda podcast for you. We'll have another one for you very shortly. Take care.
See you later.